explain a little bit. If you have an agenda in front of you, it's not going to happen the way that agenda suggests. We will have a report from SAFE later in this hour, probably. We're going to start with hearings, and we're waiting for Senator Courtney. Hearings, kind of a hearing on all these Senate bills, 8, 9, 10, and 486. We're going to do all of just kind of some general hearings so people can comment on them all at once. And then I have several people from various tribes around Oregon that have long distances to travel, and so at 3:30, or as close to 3:30 as I can, I'm going to open a hearing on Senate Bill 362, and then we'll go back and pick up the work on 223 and the State Accident Insurance Fund report and stuff like that. I'll tell you what, since the illustrious president isn't in here, I'm going to ask Judith if she'll do a background, and then I'm going to call any and all state representatives that want to make a comment about 8, 9, 10, and 486 to come forward, and you can just go in front of the president if he can't get here on time. What can I say? Judith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We'll start with Senate Bill 8. Creates an Oregon Military Emergency Financial Relief Program and an Oregon Military Emergency Financial Relief Fund. It appropriates monies to the military department for the program. It does declare an emergency effective July 1st, 2005. We have received a no revenue impact, and this measure does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. You'll notice on the front page of the bill, line 19, Ways and Means would fill in the blank on the measure there. Mr. Chair, we'll move on to Senate Bill 9. Senate Bill 9 creates the Oregon National Guard Memorial Program. It establishes the Oregon National Guard Memorial Fund and appropriates money from the general fund to the Oregon Military Department for the program. It defines the terms eligible member as well as family member for purposes of the program. Again, declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2005. This measure also has no revenue impact and has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Senate Bill 10 creates a Veterans Service Officer Expansion Program in the Oregon Department of Administrative Services. It creates a Veterans Service Officer Expansion Program Fund and appropriates money to the department for the program, declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2005. We have received no revenue impact and, again, a subsequent referral to Ways and Means on Senate Bill 10. And finally, Senate Bill 486 extends tuition waiver program of Oregon Military Department to surviving family members of the Oregon National Guard killed while on active duty. It defines the term eligible post-secondary institution as well as surviving family member for purposes of the program, declares emergency effective the same date, July 1st, 2005. We have no revenue impact on the measure, and we have not received a physical fiscal estimate on this bill, although it's my understanding that, in fact, language in the bill, and let me find it for you. There's language in the bill that would limit it such that it would not have a fiscal impact. And I will come back and point that language out to you.
Okay, you can do that after we've heard from Senator Courtney, who I'm going to call up first, okay?
Subject.
Go ahead and insert that. Hang on a second, Peter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for the record there, if you look on page 1 of the bill, line 10, it is subject to availability of funds, and that's why the President did not put a subsequent referral to Ways and Means on this measure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Shields. Ken Walker, Senator Berger.
Could you pull that mic over? I think some people want to hear you behind you.
Thank you, Chair Fields and Senator Walker, Senator Starr, and Senator Berger. I'm Peter Courtney. I'm a state senator from District 11, which is a good part of Salem and up through Jervis and Woodburn and all the land in between. I live at 2925 Island View Drive, northeast here at Salem, 97303, and I'm here today to speak. Is there a specific, all the bills or some of the bills? What would you like me to do, Chair Shields?
Before you got here, we opened a hearing on 8, 9, 10, and 486.
Okay. Let me just start with Senate Bill 8 for you. I'm going to do something I usually don't do today. I believe, do they have copies of my testimony? I usually don't like to read from my testimony because it's just not my style, but some of what I'm going to say as I get into it, I actually would learn, surprises me, and some of it actually I have conflict about. So as a result, I'm going to probably stick closer to the text than I usually do, and then maybe at the end I'll comment on what surprised me and then what where I'm conflicted. Senate Bill 8 established an emergency fund for the family of National Guard's persons who called active duty for 30 days or longer. My understanding, we have about 8,000 Oregonians in the Air or National or Air or Army National Guard. It's like September 11th, 2001. Approximately 5,000 of them have been mobilized for federal active duty. 1,600 are on active duty right now. The purpose of Senate Bill 8 is to provide some financial assistance within the state's ability to those families who are finding it difficult to make ends meet because their family members have been mobilized for federal service. As currently drafted, this bill would direct the Oregon Military Department to adopt rules for administering the program. It would then authorize the department to provide hardship grants of up to $2,000 per family. I'm not wedded to this figure. As you know, if you've ever noticed my style, I tend to introduce a bill, but I never am totally wedded to it, because to me every bill is a work in progress, and you always defer to the expertise of the individual members of the committee as well as the collective nature of the committee. Senate Bill 9 would establish a memorial program and fund for the National Guard's person who were killed or injured while on active duty. The bill provided a death benefit of up to $5,000 to families of those who were killed, an injury benefit of $1,000 to Guard's person who were injured. When I testified before you at in Tigard early this month on Senate Bills 18 and 19, we discussed the fact that the federal government currently pays a death benefit of $12,000 to soldiers killed on active duty. And I called that gratuity a token, and I recognize that the $5,000 benefit proposed in Senate Bill 9 is also a token. I understand that Congress is presently considering a major increase to the federal death benefit. I also understand earlier today I learned that that $12,000, and I'm not certified smarter than this, my fellow legislators, that is the same amount that was used in World War II. It has not actually been changed since World War II. But I'm not going to start commenting too much on Congress or the federal government. I just think that these figures obviously... they seem a bit low to me, and obviously they haven't really had much attention paid to them. I would like to mention one other important note. In the current form, Senate Bill 9 states that the purpose is to provide a $5,000 death benefit as a lump sum award. From discussions with the people of the National Guard, I have been made aware that there may be a better approach. For example, it may be possible to take $5,000 and leverage it into more money by using it to purchase life insurance for our soldiers. I know that a number of states have started to look at this option. That way, for the same cost to the state, the family of a soldier who dies in combat might receive substantially more than we would provide as a lump sum award. Therefore, perhaps a sensible amendment to Senate Bill 9 would be say that the purpose is to provide a minimum of $5,000 death benefit, but that the military department has the discretion to choose options other than a lump sum award, that would result in more money for the families. So again, even as I present a bill, as I present testimony, I'm presenting options you might consider to improve upon it, or at least I try to make you aware of what some other states are doing, looking at ways to deal with this. Senate Bill 10 appropriates $5 million from the General Fund in order to fully fund the County Veterans Service Officer Program. As you know, our veterans have a wide array of veterans federal benefits available to them, from pensions to educational, vocational benefits to medical benefits and more, but our veterans don't necessarily know that all these benefits are available. Even if they do know, they may have difficulty in applying for them, or the federal government may make errors in awarding them. CVSOs function as liaisons to help our veterans navigate what can often be a complicated and confusing bureaucracy in order to obtain the benefits that are rightfully theirs. The CVSO program existed for a number of years, but the state contribution program is currently only $10,000 to $12,000 per county. And then it goes on from there. I'm not going to continue to read because this is where I think you get into reading and you lose the attention of your community members, even if you already haven't. But the CVSO program has existed. This bill is an attempt to put some money into it and make it more formidable than it is. We are building up a large number of veterans as a result of September 11, 2001 and the Iraqi situation as well as other situations. And so these veterans do turn their number of benefits. They need a coordinator. They need a clerk of the works, as I say, to try to navigate the different programs. I've already mentioned the vital role the CVSO plays in improving the lives of veteran population. It is absolutely essential to understand the vital role that the CVSOs play in terms of our state budget. They steer our veterans to the benefits that are available to them from the federal government. We have over 370,000 veterans and dependents of veterans in the state of Oregon. They receive an average of about $2,500 annually in federal benefits. This is the lowest per capita expenditure of any state with a comparable veteran population. Oregon is not getting its share of federal money. This bill is a way to address that. I want to come back to this. That is one of the bills that caught me by surprise. Here I am introducing it, Senate Bill 10. But I didn't know something I learned earlier today. So that's one of my surprises. I ask you to challenge me on if I forget at the end of the committee why I got surprised on that. Final bill is Senate Bill 486, the last bill talk about this bill, relating to tuition waivers, something I've always been very interested in. We already have a program in Oregon that allows for tuition to be waived subject to the availability of funds for members of the Oregon National Guard who attend Oregon's post-secondary institutions. Senate Bill 486 would simply extend the eligibility for that program to surviving spouses or dependents of Guards persons who are killed on active duty. Conclusion, one issue that has come up in discussion now relating to Senate Bill 898486 is why they single out members of the National Guard with benefits. We also have Oregonians who are reservists in the regular armed forces. Now, I'm not going to read the rest of this except to say this is the heartache I have in my testimony. I know down in Eugene, for example, Senator Walker, there is a Marine reservist unit down there that's been deployed at least twice there. And I believe there is several others in the state. But I particularly remember watching the films as they deployed the reservist Marine unit twice to Iraq. As you know, people in the Guard are basically state militia. That's our people's militia. Reservists are the federal type of military. Now, they're still military now. And, you know, Iraq is Iraq. They're going over there and serving our country. And it simply became a question of ability to fund them. And I leave it up to you whether or not you want to include these reservists or not. Obviously, when the National Guard's person is going over, they've then been federalized. But I have had some comments as to why reservists are not included in these different bills. And that's why I'm conflicted. I admit to you today I'm conflicted. I go back and forth on that. But that was my conflict. And I can't really help you with it today in the end. Now you begin to understand when I preface my remarks, Chair, that is my conflict. Let me go back to my surprise. I learned earlier today that in this CVSO program, there is a struggle going on now I didn't know about, and I should have perhaps, but I don't. This is where I don't micromanage. When I drafted Senate Bill 10, I meant what I said about those county people who can help our different veterans. But the bill would take it out of the Veterans Department, State of Oregon, and I put it under DAS or something like that. Now, I don't want to get into a territorial battle here. I'm not interested in that. But that has now been raised an issue earlier today by me in a very strong conversation I had in my office. And I did not know that was out there, but I want you to know that it's out there. I owe it to you as my fellow legislators to know that there's a bit of a struggle going on now. Okay, great program, Peter, but why are you shifting it from the Veterans Department to DAS? I said, am I? Yeah, you are, or something like that. And I said, well, the bottom line for me is to make sure these veterans understand their benefits that are owed to them and to navigate them through all those different programs. And so I also wanted you to know that that's out there as well as I bring you this phalanx of measures that are before you. There are some issues here, and while the bottom line, I think, for all of us is to take care of these veterans and their families and we've got some issues here that need to be resolved. And so I have hurriedly gone through the bills in deference to the incredible workload you have here, and also I've hurriedly gone through them because I don't like to read every word of the testimony that's been put together. This is pretty heavyweight testimony. I'd like to take credit for it. I can't. That's why I have up here in my staff here Chris Garrett, who is my legal genius who works in my office, who's helped do a lot of the research on what's here. And so that's why I wanted him, just in case you ask me a question I can't answer, he can answer it, or maybe somebody else behind me. So thank you, Chair, members of the committee, for allowing me to present these different measures.
We're not going to do a lot of questions right now because of the schedule that I outlined earlier, right, and what we have to do, but we will return to these bills. If you've got a burning question that you want to ask the senator before he leaves, I'll allow that now, as long as we keep that real quick, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Courtney, you brought up the issue in Senate Bill 10 that I was concerned about. If you are now concerned about it as well, moving the program to DAS, are you looking at an amendment to bring forward to put it where it belongs, back to the Veterans Department?
Well, I'm looking at Chair Shields and Senator Walker. What I'm looking at is to... let me pick my words here, Kirk. I want to resolve this because it's a hot issue, and we may have to put it back in the Veterans Department, to be very frank with you. And I'm sure you're going to hear about that, I think, from some other witnesses today.
Okay.
But it's got to be resolved, and let's say, in a peaceful way. I don't want this to become a territorial battle, if you understand what I'm saying. And I got caught. I just didn't know it was out there, and I should have, but I didn't know it was out there. So it could very well mean you're going to have to amend it to put it back there. And I just... again, it's open for discussion. You're going to hear testimony. I think you're going to hear about it. I just want to let you know it's coming.
I'm aware of the issue, too, and I want it to be an open discussion without prejudicing the discussion from one side or the other. I think there's some valid arguments both ways. So we're going to have a careful discussion of that at a later time.
Okay.
I'm not going to commit myself to sending it back to the Veterans VA or whatever at this point. Okay. Peter, I want to thank you for coming. I think there's at least three or four representatives behind you that are chomping at the bit to have a chance to weigh in on some of these. If you want to stay and monitor this thing, you're welcome to. If you don't, we're not going to answer every question related to these anyway today.
Right.
But
okay.
Your choice, okay?
Thank you very much for allowing me to come here and tell me my day.
Earlier, before Senator Courtney got here, I just about invited any or all state representatives to come at the same time. Maybe I'll still do that. Do you all want to just come at once? Well, we'll have a bipartisan approach to the dais. How's that? Let's see. We've got three. We're going to need one more chair. Do we have an extra chair here anywhere? There we go. What I'm wanting to do is to try to stay fairly close to being on schedule, and so let's have a few minutes from each of you, and I do thank you for all being here and weighing in on the issue, and I'll let you decide who gets to go first. I have a feeling there's a consensus around Representative Nelson down there.
Thank you very much, committee, Chair Shields, and former colleagues, Senator Starr and Senator Walker and Senator Verger. It's nice to see you on this side of the campus. I did like it better when you were on our side, but anyway, it is nice to see you again, and thank you, Judith. I am honored to serve as the first chairman of our state legislature's Committee on Veteran Affairs, and the most important facet, I think, of our committee is the fact that the time is now. And over my years of serving in the legislature, I have felt that we have been greatly remiss in taking care of our veterans the way they've taken care of us. Or we might say, as they have secured our future, we have done little to secure theirs. So I'm here today in support of the measures that you have on your agenda today, Senate Bill 8, Senate Bill 9, Senate Bill 10, and Senate Bill 486. And previously, the good Senate President Peter Courtney and I discussed the bills that we're concerned about, and I will just move to Senate Bill 10 without a great deal of conversation or testimony about Senate Bill 8. The only thing, or 9, what I would like to say is what we've learned in our committee is that the truth is that anybody who has served in active duty is a veteran. And one of the most critical issues in our committee is to go to Washington, D.C. and say, once and for all, can we give credit to all who have served in our military services, be it any branch whatsoever, and appropriately respect their dedication in the missions that have been conducted by each and every one of them. We have learned to say in our committee, and thanks to the help of our member, Representative Brian Boquist, who has just returned from 7 months in Iraq, we have learned to say those servicemen and women whose home of record is Oregon. And this is how we determine who our veterans are. So if they've served and their home of record is Oregon, then we appropriately put them into the Veterans Affairs nomenclature. On Senate Bill 8, and I'll just briefly go through some points on it, or Senate Bill 10, I'm sorry. And the good president did speak to the fact that we do, or will, at the end of this year, have about 370,000 veterans in this state. And what is important about this expansion bill of veteran services is that we need to consider that we have, in our various counties, only 34 part-time county veteran service officers. 34 to serve 370,000 veterans. So if we took those 34 plus the 5 who are here in our Department of Veterans Affairs and kind of divided them into this number, we would find that, you know, even if we had 50, that each one of those county service officers would have some 7,000 clients. 7,000 clients, and those are just veterans. Now, considering 4 as a, you know, a common number in a family of 2 children and a spouse, just 4 times that means each one of 50 county service officers would have almost 30,000 clients to serve. These are individuals who must be thoroughly trained, thoroughly inundated in this huge federal bureaucracy of paperwork concerning the various services and all the various benefits. Benefits as far as medical benefits, death benefits, educational benefits, home loan benefits, and it goes on and on and on. It is a huge, huge responsibility. So in this expansion program that I also recommend that we amend to put it where it belongs in the Department of Veteran Affairs, after all, these county service veteran officers are serving veterans, and that's the appropriate place for it. The Department of Administrative Services, while it may do many things well, it is not trained in the area of veterans. We have that expertise in our military department here and in our Department of Veteran Affairs. And I have spoken to President Courtney about this. I am asking you to support these bills, to consider our entire militia as we consider the benefits that we're going to be offering our veterans. Consider the bill that asks for a death benefit, and consider what Governor Richardson has done in New Mexico. For $16 a month, those veterans get $250,000 of life insurance. Surely we can do the same. So I hope as we look at these bills that we consider the all-encompassing needs that our veterans have faced for years and years and years, and we have not faced them with them. Thank you for your support.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. I recognize that Senator Brown has come into the room and Senator Farioli, and I have another bill, and they're waiting to do it. So I'm going to give each of you a few more minutes to take testimony on these bills, and then I'm going to close this hearing, and we're going to move to the other bill that we have on our agenda. So whatever order you're going in, let's go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Phil Barnhart. I'm State Representative from House District 11, and I'm Vice Chair of the Veterans Affairs Committee of the House. Mr. Chair, Shields, Senator Walker, Senator Starr, Senator Verger, thank you very much for allowing us to come in this afternoon. I want to let you know that I strongly support your bills to help veterans at this time of great hardship and uncertainty for them. I've come to urge not only the bills that are before you now, but also that you enact SB 223, which increases the maximum veterans' home loan eligibility to 100% of the home's value, and also the other bills you have under consideration. I can think of no more worthy measures than creating an Oregon Military Emergency Financial Relief Fund, an Oregon Military Emergency Financial Relief Program. The need for a National Guard Memorial Program is clear. And as Chair Nelson has already pointed out, the Veteran Service Officer Expansion Program is a key to helping veterans, new and old, access available federal veterans programs that could provide important benefits if only the veteran can access them. As our committee has worked over the last several weeks, we come back over and over and over again to the need to support this particular program, because it seems to be the key funnel through which everything else operates. And so I can't emphasize it enough. We share your reverence for the sacrifices that our valiant young citizens make when they enter the armed forces and the National Guard, the time away from their families and friends, the financial sacrifice of leaving their jobs and careers, and yes, their very lives and limbs. When one of them falls, a surviving family deserves the tuition waiver provided for in SB 486, and I urge you enact it. Mr. Chair, in addition to the bills that you're considering, the House Committee is also going to be considering a number of bills, and I wanted to just, if I may, just quickly summarize some of the issues that are likely to come back over here.
I'd prefer to just stay with these bills now, right, given the amount of time.
If I may, I'll submit the rest of my remarks in writing at a later time. Thank you again for allowing us to present our concerns. And like you, I feel a deep concern for our citizen soldiers who serve our country. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Shields and members of the committee, thank you for holding this important hearing on Senate Bills 8, 9, 10, and 486. For the record, I am Representative Betty Comp, House District 22. I do not want to take a lot of time and reiterate this, but I just want to share that I support what Representative Speaker Minnis has presented along with Senator Courtney, and it is an important issue, and on behalf of our, you have my testimony in front of you, so I'm not going to read it other than the last sentence. On behalf of the active duty soldiers and Oregon National Guardsmen serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, thank you for hearing these bills, and I encourage speedy passage so we can get to work on them in the House. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I am Representative Brian Boquist from the 23rd House District. I'm also a reserve lieutenant colonel in the Army Reserve. I've served in the Oregon Army National Guard along with the Washington Army National Guard, and I actually belong to an active duty command, which is quite different from the reserve components. I joined the Army right after the fall of Saigon in December of 75 and hope to retire by December or January of this year after 30 years in service. We've definitely gone a long way since the days of being spit upon in the Portland airport to where we sit today. And the fact that your committee on this side and our committee on the other side is a true reflection of where we're going to support veterans and not get into the political discussion and conflict. I want to address very specifically Senate Bill 10 and the County Veteran Service Officers. In our committee, and in my experience of 30 years, in the last 3 weeks, we have had presentations from no less than 12 different agencies of the federal government, of the state government, and of the counties. And in every single case, they pointed to the gatekeeper to almost $1 billion in resources that are outside of the state of Oregon. already funded resources as being the county veteran service officers. And those are educational benefits, health care benefits, employment benefits, and everything else that already are funded normally. If we want to help veterans and we don't want to bankrupt the state, the county, and the cities, we have to open the gateway up in those county veteran service officers. And I mean even to the point of the federal administrator for this region, the Veterans Administration of the U.S. government, when he starts talking about how to access the federal programs, he uses the county veteran service officer. That is the key focal point. Once that gateway is opened, then all of the rest of the bills, many of which we're addressing about additional benefits, additional health care, and other programs, we're going to find that existing programs can actually service those programs. I support the concept of the County Veteran Service Officers. I do agree with Senator Courtney that there are some issues that have to be resolved, and there are some long-term funding issues. So I would look forward to working with members of the committee and with Senator Courtney and Speaker Minnis in addressing that specific bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. I want to thank each of you for coming and for the time you spent and waiting to get a chance to speak. I invite any of you to come and talk with me personally if you have issues. I'm aware of this issue, even though it has caught up with both Senator Courtney and myself today. It is something that we're going to have fair, open, honest discussion about, and we're going to resolve the issues. And I would just as soon on number 10 resolve the issue on this side before we send it to you. I don't like to send a half-baked loaf across the building. So thank you for coming, and feel free to contact Judith or myself anytime.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, I want to close the hearing on Senate Bill 8, 9, 10, and 486, and open a hearing on Senate Bill 362. And I'm asking Senator Kate Brown, and is Senator Ted Farrioli still here? There he is. And following you, I think we're going to hear from some of the native folks that are here. They're the ones that have the longest way to drive. And I told them I'd get them out of here before dark. So go ahead.
Thank you, Senator Shields. Members of the Senate General Government Committee, for the record, I'm State Senator Kate Brown. I represent Senate District 21. And thank you very much for your willingness to hear Senate Bill 362. In 2001, this legislature had the courage to pass Senate Bill 488, which was what we called the name change bill. It required the geographic names board to delete the word squaw from geographic locations in Oregon. Unfortunately, that task is not done yet, and the bill that we passed in 2001 had a sunset. So what Senate Bill 362 does is repeal the sunset. It does one additional thing. It requires that the public body consider words or phrases from a traditional language when going through the renaming process. Last December, I had the opportunity to visit the Umatilla Reservation just outside of Pendleton, and we were touring the hatchery facilities that they've established, the Habitat Restoration Project. I saw firsthand the power that the bill we passed had in communities around our state. The salmon were returning, the habitat was being restored, and we were standing on the banks of Iscopa Creek, a body of water that was once known by another name. The name change bill represents more than the words we put on signs and maps. It represents the future of Oregon. It is fitting that we have this hearing and conversation during Native American Day at the Capitol. But this bill is about much more than a word. It is about the message that we send to Oregonians, that the state belongs to all of us and that we all are welcome here. So I urge you to support Senate Bill 362. I believe that all of you were able to support the earlier version, Senate Bill 488, and I hope you can continue to send a message of respect, tolerance, and appreciation for all in our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Brown. Senator Farrioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. The Senate Bill 362, I have a slightly different interpretation than my colleague. It actually repeals the grace period. What we had done in the 2001 was we
we just determined that we would take this unconsciously racist and sexist term off of public name, place names, maps, and references. And I say it's unconscious because we had a lot of testimony from people who just really got wrapped up in the idea that there was some kind of historic reference that needs to be, or somehow needed to be, preserved in our language and our culture and our heritage. And I think that it just demonstrated for me that there was a great deal of education that needed to happen, and a little more sensitivity and a little more consciousness directed toward the issue of the use of a term that is in fact sexist and racist. We had that argument. It was a very passionate argument. We had lots of folks, in fact, even in one instance, a person who testified so passionately had to be escorted out of the building. The bottom line, Mr. Chairman, is we did pass the bill, and we had in there a grace period that allowed public bodies to have a period of time in order to make the changes that they needed to, and it was a reasonable request at the time. Reprinting maps, relettering signs, changing corporate culture, just really doing all those kinds of things that need to be done, it does take time. And unless we were willing to bear the expense of a precipitous change, we were asked to give folks, in the normal course of affairs, the time that they needed to do the work. That's been 4 years. And the idea that many have not moved forward as quickly as possibly they needed to do. Plus, there's an attempt here in Senate Bill 362 to, in fact, expand the prohibition. If I could expand it to federal authority, Mr. Chairman, I'd be here with my colleagues' support, I think, in asking that we do that as well. My colleague's right. In a way, it does extend the reach and scope of this bill by removing that that grace period. There's nothing graceful about the term. It's time for us to recognize that it's very hurtful, and that it's a cultural affront to generations of people who live in this community. And we just think it's time that we expand the reach and scope and remove this obstacle to a healing that needs to occur in this regard. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm pleased to be here with my colleague to support the bill, and pleased to bring it again before the legislature.
Thank you very much. Questions? Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senators, I'm struck by your last point, Senator Ferrioli. If you could do so, both of you would be asking Congress to remove those names. So my question is, we have a heck of a lot of joint memorials and those kinds of things that go to Congress, and whether they mean anything or not or get looked at, I don't know. But have we done something like that here with regard to these names?
After conferring for a nanosecond with my colleague, I think we have not, Mr. Chairman. But to the Senator's question, I think it would be a more powerful statement if every member of the legislature signed a letter to that regard and mm-hmm. sent that to the Oregon delegation. Joint memorials are great, but they cost about $10,000 to put through the system. I think there's probably a blizzard of state legislative joint memorials that arrive in Congress, but I think it's relatively rare to have mm-hmm. all of the state delegation to sign a letter to its federal delegation and ask them to take that issue forward. Mr. Chairman, to the senator's issue, there's a whole lot of things I would love to be able to get the federal government to do or not do in Oregon, and someday I hope that we have a better relationship with our federal partners.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to follow up, and I agree with you. In this instance, the state has taken a position. They don't want to use this offensive name, mm-hmm. and so I would be amenable to signing a letter and sending it off to our delegation, asking them to draft legislation in Congress.
Madam Chairman, I think
the ability in Oregon to take it off of federal.
Mr. Chairman, to the Senator, I think if we were to request Senate leadership and House leadership to orchestrate that, or if any member of the body decided to take the initiative, simply to have that letter put on a chamber letterhead, I can't imagine a member that would not want to sign that letter. So.
I think it would be most appropriate if we'd have it on the floor the day we do this, pass this bill on the Senate floor, for instance, and we'd send it over to the House, have the letter there, and we can all sign it at that point in time. It'd kind of be a different approach, you know.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, to my knowledge, this is actually being done across the states on a state-by-state basis. Mm-hmm. I know that the state of Montana, I believe the state of Minnesota, have also passed legislation similar to this. I know that the state of Idaho considered legislation. I'm not sure whether they've been successful in passing that. So to my knowledge, the movement, so to speak, has been done on a state-by-state basis. But I'd certainly be willing and be happy to orchestrate a letter if folks would be willing to sign on to a letter. That's a great idea.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think it would. We can pass legislation, but whether Congress knows that we passed our own legislation, I don't know. And I just think your idea of having the letter available on the day we pass it on the floor of the Senate, because I'm assuming we're going to pass this bill again, it would be very... a very nice thing, a very nice gesture, and a very nice ceremony that we could do.
And, Mr. Chairman, I think the only reason that the bill creates an exemption for geographic features named by the United States is the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution.
Right.
Any other questions? Yes, Senator Verger.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a question. I served on the House Rules Committee in 01, and that was where this testimony came, and everyone was very much in favor of the change. I guess that what I would ask, can you give me an idea of how many changes have actually been made, and have there been very few, so that left it just kind of hanging?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, I don't know the answer to that question. There may be someone else in the audience who does. But we'll try and get that information for you. That's a very good question.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, to the Senator's question, I think this gives us another opportunity to send the informative memo to state agencies and special districts. That the sunset, Mr. Chairman, that the grace period is repealed.
Right.
And it's just another way to get their attention focused on the fact that they have an obligation and they can't delay any longer. The repeal of the grace period means that they must take action. And I would assume that means on the very next expression, printing, addition, mapping, websites, etc.
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, I do know that some of the difficulties in the renaming of places is just folks wanting to make sure that local people had input in terms of the new suggested name or names. And I think some of the discussion, the reason why it took longer than we had anticipated is that just getting the new name where communities agreed upon the new name, there has been some difficulty. So that's my understanding anyway. Someone else might correct me. But.
And, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to thank Olivia Walulitam, who was instrumental in informing my office of the issue and helping us to focus our attention on the issue.
Well, that's a great segue because Olivia and Louis Pitt are next on my witness list, and I'm asking them to come and take your chairs here. Thank you. Thank both of you. Welcome. We're glad to have you here this afternoon.
Olivia's going to let me go first because I'm the boss. I'm Louis Pitt, Jr.
You work for them, don't you? They're the boss.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Director of Government Affairs and Planning at Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. I'm here to support Senate Bill 362 and all that it does. I'd just like to, I guess, reserve myself to answer some background questions that maybe I know about that Olivia doesn't, and turn it over to Olivia.
Olivia?
My name's Olivia Walulitam, Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, Wasco, Treaty Tribe people. Before I speak, I'd like to sing a prayer song because I am a member of the Sim National Longhouse, and before we do business, we always do a prayer. My husband's not here at this time, so I will sing a song. Being here today to listen to the few words that I have to say. I say a prayer for all the people, for all of you legislative body are very important to this country. You have a lot of work to do, a lot of bills to pass. Our future depends on you. A little background about this bill. When I was a young girl, I was called a squaw by children of my own age. And I lived in the Sandy, Oregon area, a place that is a usual and custom place of our ancestry on our Wasco side. So when I used to come over here to give support for this bill from my colleague, Colleen Roba, who's not here today, it kind of opened up an old wound. I haven't been called a squaw in a long time. It is a racist term. The squaw words that you see in Oregon, all those are racist. And you know, it would be good to like start a new page, a fresh page, where all of those words aren't there no more, because those are visual reminders. And, you know, I'm here also because of the new generation. Because as a female, we need to think positive for our young children that they might not face this experience of prejudice that we've had, us older ones have had. And there's a lady of royalty. I don't know if she's been introduced, but she's back here. Could you please stand? I don't know her name, but I knew her great grandmother, Louise Johnson. And Louise Johnson would be really proud to see this young lady today. But that lady, that elder who passed away, her family used to come to the Sandy River. And her family, they used to cook eels there because there were some eels on the Sandy River. And as a child, this lady was always around, and her family, this young lady, her family, but I never knew her that well. I'm pretty much to myself in my older age. And I just hope that this bill is passed and it would give our people the opportunity to be able to use some of the Indian words that we have. Because our people have been on this continent for a long time, for generations upon generations. One time somebody asked me, well, how come you guys never tried to have a city? Why didn't you guys try to learn about something like electric and get that going. But that wasn't our people's ways. And Elder Matilda Mitchell, she talked about the mountain. She said, from that mountain, it's sacred because it has fire and it has water. The water is what we honor because of the life that it gives for the salmon. For every vein upon the earth where that water flows gives life to the people. So when we say our prayers, we drink that water in honor of that. But our people have come a long ways, and we're still here. And it would be nice if we could be able to name some of those in our own language. But, you know, it would be good to have that time to be able to give us more time. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it very much. Are there any questions that any of you would like to ask?
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I don't have any questions, but I would like to thank you for coming today and for testifying and for the beautiful prayer. As a woman, I don't think that to be demeaned in any way is appropriate. And I hope that in 01, I thought it was taken care of. I thought that was the end of it. And so I did notice, however, that there was a hope that you would have the term replaced with another Indian term. And I wondered if there has been a movement to just pick certain terms that you have suggested to the agencies that would be making those changes of those terms to be used. Has that already been done?
When we worked with the Oregon Geographical Names Board, they didn't want the Indian names because they said it would be too hard to pronounce. Excuse me. And then also they only meet like two times in a year. And the time that they wanted to have a meeting was over in Klamath Falls at the same time that we honor our treaty and the Treaty of 1855, and we have that in June. So that was a direct conflict with me, so I stayed on the reservation and participated in the powwow. It's kind of hard to work with them.
Follow me, Mr. Chairman. I would comment. I was born in Amite, Louisiana. Amite is an Indian name. And a lot of people maybe didn't know how to pronounce it in the beginning, but everybody learned how to pronounce it. Mm-hmm. In my whole section of the state of southeastern Louisiana are many, many Indian names. They may not be familiar names to people, but we learn to pronounce them and to pronounce them correctly. So I would respectfully disagree that people should not put a word up because people wouldn't know how to pronounce it. They would know.
Is there some possible way that we could communicate with this organization and indicate that the epitome of laziness might be not learning how to pronounce a few names? I mean, I grew up in western Pennsylvania near the Allegheny, the Youghiogheny, the Monongahela rivers.
But we had the Cassiopeia.
Yeah,
so.
That's right. And over in Mississippi, there's a Shuticabuff. Try spelling that one sometime. I mean, it's the epitome of laziness not to be able to learn a little bit of the indigenous language of the places that we came from. Even everybody knows the Ohio River. A lot of people don't stop and realize that too is an Indian name. You know, to me, this is mind-boggling. I want to thank you for your testimony, and I think we ought to assign a few names to these folks to deal with and get over it. Louis, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Chair, just to the committee, to I think it's we need some more time to get the work done, do it right. Indian times, taking the time to do it right.
In
respect, I think thank you, Senator Berger, for your comments on this. It's right on, and we'll do what we can to I think it's a wonderful state, the state of Oregon, and a lot of wonderful names out there, and it's just a matter for us to get back to those names, too, instead of the names we got stuck with. So, thank you, committee.
Louis, I'm sure Miss Warm Springs has a name, and it needs to be introduced properly here. And if you'd like to make a comment, feel free to do so.
Hello, my name is Christine Johnson. My Indian name is Yelsta. I am Miss Warm Springs 2005, and it's been an honor here to hear what has been going on. And I hope you guys take consideration of this, and I'm glad to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. If there are no other questions, I'm going to let you step back from the dais. And I think, if I'm right, someone from the Governor's Commission wanted to do some testimony. Is Robert Lawrence still here? Come on up and share with us for a couple minutes. And go ahead.
Jill, thank you very much. I feel abandoned. I thought I was supposed to be on a panel with three people, but I'll proceed anyway.
Excuse me? Are you testifying on this bill?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm a member. My name is Bob Lawrence, and I'm a member of the Governor's Commission on Senior Services. And I am from Lake Oswego, Clackamas mm-hmm. County. And I am speaking on behalf of Senate Bill 10, and we are very supportive of it.
Right. Okay. We're not on a Senate Bill 10.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You have apparently signed up to speak on Senate Bill 362, which is this Native American bill.
I'm sorry.
And so what I'm going to ask you to do is step back, and we'll return to that in a little bit. Is there anybody else that wants to speak on Senate Bill 362? I want to ask, first I'm going to close the hearing, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 362, and I'm going to ask that Judith tell the audience and the other senators that what I'm about to do in passing this bill to the floor, I've been advised not to do. And give me the cockamamie reason why.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 362, we have received the no revenue impact statement. We have not yet received a fiscal on the measure, and that was the reason for my advice. It's my understanding that legislative fiscal is still waiting for agency responses, particularly from the Parks Department, to get a handle on exactly the cost of changing the remaining signs and that sort of thing. So that is the reason for it.
Okay. Now, in my humble opinion, a request has been made. We didn't get the answers in a timely way. There is no doubt that we all wanted to do this 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. We passed it 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. It would seem to me some agencies have had 4 years to figure out the fiscal that we didn't get. Therefore, unless I have serious objection by either of the two of you, I would like to continue with the work session. Any problem?
No problem.
No problem.
Any further discussion? We need a motion. So I did open the work session. I did open. Yes.
Is there a special way we need this motion other than to move this bill to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation?
That's it. Straight on.
There you go, Mr. Chair.
He just did it. Okay. So Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 362 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? If not, would the clerk call the roll?
Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator Walker.
Aye.
Senator Shields. Aye. And 362 is passed. I'm sure we've got more than enough people wanting to carry the bill. I imagine that Brown and Ferrioli will probably share in that event, and I hope that we have a document to sign at the same time to Congress when we do that. I want to thank all of you that came for this hearing, and with that I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 362. Now I'm in somewhat of a quandary. I'm going to take a little bit more testimony, I think, even though I've run way past time, on Senate Bills 8, 9, 10, and 486, and so I'm going to open a hearing on those right now, and I guess I will ask Robert Lawrence, if he'll come forward, since he wanted to testify a minute ago. At least we're on the right bill at this point. And Jacqueline Zimmer, do you want to come forward, or do you have other people coming forward? Okay, one other person to come forward. Representative Witt. We'll get him out of the hall. We're working on that right now. Welcome, all of you, and Lawrence, I'm sorry, Mr. Lawrence, I'm sorry we had you confused when you came forward.
This is my first time, so.
That's okay. This can be a confusing place. Go ahead, I'll let you hold forth for a minute. Jacqueline, did you want to go first and set a context?
Certainly,
here?
Mr. Chair, if that's right
fine.
With you, I will speak, and then Jeff Hill will speak, and then we'd like to have Mr. Lawrence call up. And then, of course, recognizing that if Representative Witt comes in, we'll abandon the chair for him. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jacqueline Zimmer. I'm the director of the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities, O4AD. And I'm here speaking to you just briefly today about this bill because the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities the Area Agencies on Aging in several of our offices, their county veteran services offices, are part of our system of delivery, our service system of care, our delivery system. Sorry, I think a mid-afternoon snack is probably in order here.
That's the truth.
Yeah, so at any rate, in Washington County, in Multnomah County, Clackamas County, Lake County, several of our offices do house county veteran services officers, and there is a direct link between what they do and the long-term care services that we provide. And so over the years, we've been interested in the funding issue for the county veteran services officers. We've watched the flat funding for a very long time and have worked to increase the amount of benefits that come into the state to veterans who either did not know they were eligible for benefits or who have had difficulty navigating the federal VA and who are using Oregon's long-term care services. Could be benefiting from VA benefits and some funding there. So we've been working with county veteran services officers to put together a bill that increases their funding and expands the number of people that they can serve. That's pretty much the gist of why we work on this particular issue.
Okay.
As a way of bringing revenue to the state and helping the veterans get what they're entitled to.
Okay. I'm going to let a couple other folks here testify. I think some clarity is starting to come to the issue, but we'll probably have several questions. Go ahead, Mr. Lawrence.
Thank you, Chairman Shields and members of the committee. This is my first time ever testifying. My name is Bob Lawrence, and I'm a member of the Governor's Commission on Senior Services, and I'm from Lake Oswego in Clackamas County. I'm also the chair of the Legislative Committee and of the Governor's Commission, and we've been working very closely with O4AD on this particular bill. When this bill became active with a number, I assigned this to World War II veteran, and he reviewed it and gave it a top priority, and that was Mr. Don Butch. And then I gave it to a Korean War veteran, and he also gave it a top priority. So that's why the Governor's Commission is here in support of this bill. I spent a great deal of time in the field as a manager for the Department of Human Services, and part of the in the Portland metro area, and part of the application process was that if anybody said they were a veteran, we would pursue that with as much vigor as possible. And it was very frustrating because the benefits were hard to come by. It was hard to squeeze them. And so we continued with that, and that's 34 years ago when we started that, and we've always done that. It's much more sophisticated now. This bill is important for a number of reasons. Number one is that the World War II veterans are in their 80s and 90s, some of them, and they are entering the long-term care system at a very high level of need. And we need to address that issue. The second generation that's coming up is the Korean War veterans, and those are called the silent generation because we haven't heard too much from them. But they're starting to enter the long-term care system, too. And then, of course, we have the people in their 60s that are coming up from the Vietnam War. And so there's a heavy duty ahead of us. The amount of money that's funded for this, $5 million, will be returned many, many times. Clackamas County has a part-time veteran service officer, and in 1 year they were able to recoup $11 million in veterans benefits. And that was very vigorous. They also got a grant to reach out to homeless veterans. They also got a grant to deal with employment. Anecdotal story that's pretty famous in Clackamas County. There was a homeless person that was hanging out in the parking lot. He was kind of living there. And so the social service workers would come out with coffee or donuts, and he was pretty shabby and pretty cold, and they brought him out a sleeping bag. And then they got to talking to him, and he said, "You know, I'm a veteran." "Oh, really?" So they pursued it, and he obviously had mental health problems, and he became eligible for veterans benefits through their pursuit. He was able to get monthly benefits of $2,400. He now has his own apartment. He has fancy new clothes. He is getting mental health treatment from the Veterans Administration because of his mental health disability. So that's only one person. The gentlemen and the women that are coming back from Iraq are going to be a challenge. As you all know, their survival rate is very high, but they're coming back with disabilities that we haven't dealt with before. And their needs are going to be much greater. They're also coming back with traumatic head injuries that we haven't dealt with before. So they're going to need a great deal of help in education, housing benefits, counseling, and all the rest of it. So we are, Governor's Commission, are very supportive of this bill, and we hope we can pass this on and then it passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Hill. I'm with the Oregon County Veterans Service Officers Association, and I'm the current Veterans Service Officer of Washington and Columbia Counties. Regarding the discussion as to the bill, I guess I was one of the authors of the bill and know a lot of the history, so I can help out there. But I think prior to going to that discussion, I would like to say that this same question was asked by Representative Boquist when I testified in front of the Veterans Affairs Committee for the House. And at that time, I told him that I was more than willing to have the money go through the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs if that was the desire of the legislature. But we wanted assurances built in that that funding indeed would be dedicated to the County Veterans Services Officers and would not be used by the Department of Veterans Affairs for any other purposes. So I just wanted to make that clear that the Oregon County Veterans Service Officers are not against either the Department of Veterans Affairs being the pass-through for these funds. We just want assurances that these funds will make it to the counties for the purposes that they were legislated for. And I'm here as a member of the association in support of the bill.
I see you as a kind of a key person information-wise because you experienced some conversation about this on the House side already, and you are one of the folks who is truly a county veteran service officer, right?
Yes, sir.
And what your problem has been, it seems to me, is that you've worked with, obviously, with O4ID?
Yes, sir.
And you see the services they're providing, and you see the infrastructure that they have to deliver that service.
That's correct.
You were located there before this bill came forward, and you work with the department. I mean, the money had come through the Department of Veterans Affairs before. Is that right?
We get the $12,500 is a statute that we can apply for from ODBA every year, and currently we've only been receiving about $10,000 every year because the funding has not been increased.
Uh-huh.
But that's all we receive from them, and it's been that funding has been coming through to us. Yes.
Do you think that there's some room for me to get everybody together in the same place and work this out so we can get some guarantees and do this right? I'm interested in, I don't care, excuse me, where things get housed. I'm interested in delivering the benefits. You know what I'm saying? And using the infrastructure that we have to get the job done. We don't have to reinvent any wheels. Am I at lunch, Senator Verger? I'm just trying to figure this out.
I don't think it's important where it's housed at all. I think it's the effectiveness of the program.
Right.
And I think it's to elevate it to a little bit higher standard than we have right now. So
yeah.
I have no problem with
it. I think Senator Courtney was kind of blindsided by this today.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can work it out so that it all makes sense. But I want to talk to the people like this guy, mm-hmm. who's been doing the job and delivering the services and knows the terrain, right. and so on.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I could, Jacqueline Zimmer, we are going to be addressing this issue, and it would be lovely to have you participate. Representative Nelson has put together a small work group to address this and some of the other issues that might pop up in the County Veterans Services Officer arena. So it would be terrific to have you talk to her about that. But you're correct.
I talked to her in front of this committee just a few minutes ago when I said I'd like to send you a bill that was fixed, not one with flaws in it.
Right. We appreciate that, and that's just a hiccup in the whole bill. Really, quite honestly, the bill is really about delivering services to those veterans that don't realize they're eligible for it, and their dependents. Quite often, dependents do not realize that they're entitled to benefits when they come into our office. And so, when we ask them if they are a veteran, they might respond no. I mean, they might not realize that they're a veteran, and once we realize that they are. And we shift them to can shift them to a county veteran services officer. We'd better hope that there's actually somebody there to serve them as a county veteran services officer. That it's not Columbia County has a part time office 20 hours a week. We're just the caseloads are phenomenal for these folks. So we're that's the reason for the bill.
Okay.
Enhance the training, and it's very difficult to become a county veteran services officer. It takes several years to actually be brought up to speed and then to deal with the changes that come down from on high. So that's really what the bill's about, and I think the other piece is something that can be course corrected very, very easily.
Okay. Senator Walker has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Shields, Mr. Chair. Jacqueline, maybe you can answer this question. Are there any federal funds that come into funding this program, or is this left up to the states? Then it appears Mr. Lawrence has the answer to that question.
Yeah, I can. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Walker. Washington County has had an experiment, and we've used this for years, to use Title 19, to use matching funds to bring in Title 19 federal funds. The federal government is now saying that is not an okay way to do it. So we are going to lose our Title 19 match. I've been arguing with them about it, but they say that's not community resource development, and that's what we've always used it for. So that is going to, the Title 19 federal funds are going to dry up in terms of the veteran service officers.
So, Mr. Chair, can I follow up on this
Sure.
line of questioning? So are you telling me that our federal government sends our men and women off to war, and they come back sometimes whole, sometimes not, and they are not providing the funds for us to administer their claims and their needs here at the county and the state level?
Mr. Chair and Senator Walker, what they're basically doing is the federal government is reviewing all of Title 19, And there's a general feeling at the auditors that it's not been used appropriately. And one of the areas that they have indicated to us is that it's not appropriate to use Title 19 to go after veterans' benefits. So it's really important that we have this bill that would create county officers that will be funded through our general fund.
Mr. Chair, I think that Jeff Hill can give you a good breakdown of actually how these are funded. The stunt being stunned will continue, but let him tell you.
Okay.
Currently, the way county veteran service officers are funded is we get the $10,000 from the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and the counties themselves step up and pay the majority of the funding to keep the county veteran service offices open in their counties. The Title 19 money was something we entered into back in 1996. At that time, it was an appropriate way to use the Medicaid match funds as an outreach program and project. It's just that the federal government now is pulling that back and redefining outreach, and we're still able to use outreach, but not at the same scale that we used it before. So it's that source of funding is not going to be as available as it was. But to answer Senator Walker's question, there is no U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs funding for county veteran service officers. There never has been. We have, at the national level, have had conversations regarding that, but it has not produced any funding.
Well, Mr. Bill and Mr. Chair, I am stunned, and I guess I didn't know that. I knew that we had problems funding our county veteran service officers, but I didn't know why. And as I mentioned at the last hearing we had on these veterans issues, my father-in-law was a disabled veteran, and nobody ever told him to go back and have his service-connected disability rechecked. And this man was eligible to be 100% disabled for a couple of years before he died, and we didn't realize that until about a month before he died, and had that process being expedited through a wonderful CFSO, a CDSO in Lane County, Judy Gregg. But I'm just stunned that our government would just ignore this part of taking care of our veterans, because how are they going to know? And as Ms. Zimmer indicated, dependents of veterans don't even know that they're eligible for services. So I'm disappointed that it has to be left to us to take money out of our general fund. But as Ms. Zimmer pointed out, there is a cost savings here, because if we can get these people using the federal government's money that belongs to them, that will take less burden out of our general fund, because these people are not a burden to us. They're people that are very important to our communities. It's just trying to get the right funds in the right spot and get it directed appropriately, and I think that's shameful of Congress, and I just have to state that on the record. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for letting me just sort of editorialize.
Feel better now?
Yeah, a little.
Are there other questions for these witnesses? Okay. I've had a difficult assignment. I'm going to let you step back. I've had a difficult assignment today, and that's to balance a lot of stuff that all kind of converged on the committee at once. I'm going to let Representative Witt come forward. We've had more representatives in this committee today than I can shake a stick at, to tell you the truth. But welcome. Is there anything we can do when it's the newest representative around? Is there some initiation process? Can we haze him or harass him or anything like that?
Mr. Chair, I imagine just being in this building for a few weeks, he feels very initiated.
Yeah, I'll bet he does. Brad, it's good to have you. Do you want to testify on this bill for a few minutes? I've got another agenda that I've got to move to. But go ahead.
Just for a minute, Mr. Chairman, I will be very brief. Brad Witt, House District 31, here this afternoon, Mr. Chairman, is by no means an expert on Veterans Affairs, but just wanting to relate to you the travesty that the Veterans Service Officer from Columbia County has relayed to me. She's paid for only 2 days of work per week. Her bookwork her paperwork after work is more than double that, what she does at home, because she cares so deeply about the people that she serves. She cannot begin to come close to handling the caseload in just Columbia County alone because she's limited to 2 days a week. And on top of that, she's faced with an increased workload based on the veterans that will be coming out of our present-day wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, our state cutbacks, our budget cutbacks, are going to result in the loss of in the neighborhood of $400 million worth of federal funds. Close to $500 million when the veterans service officers in the counties around the state are not even able to realize their full allotment of a paltry $12,000 a year. Now, Mr. Chairman, I think nothing more needs to be said. This is very close to an insult to those men and women who have laid their lives on the line to protect our liberty and our democracy.
Are there any questions? You have spoken well and briefly, and I appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I know that we have several people, and I'm going to ask I'm having a tough time because I've got Mike Caldwell, I've got William Fink, I've got Val Connolly, and H.A. McDonald. I want to hear from all of you. I'd like you all to come forward. I'm not saying we're going to finish this workload today, but I want to take your testimony real quickly. I have, as people that read the agenda can see, something else on the agenda that has to do with SAFE, and I at least want to receive their report for a few minutes, and I don't want us to be here all evening. But I'd like to get your general impressions. I think we all agree that we want to see all of these bills, including Senate Bill 10, move forward. Maybe you can give us a few comments on how we're going to work our way out of the little bit of a sticky wicket that we're in. Is there anybody else on these lists that I didn't call forward?
No.
If not, who wants to hold forth first here? Go ahead. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald. I represent the Disabled American Veterans, Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Ex-Prisoner of War, the Military Officers Association of America and the Military Order of World Wars, which takes in part basically all veterans that have served overseas. My background is I'm a retired U.S. Marine, served in Korea, 1st Marine Division, 3 tours in Vietnam, one with the French, one with the United States Navy, and one with Special Forces, never with the Marine Corps. On Senate Bill number 8, we in the state have had members of the Army, Navy, Coast Guard, Marine Corps, and Air Force reserves activated. I believe that Senate Bill number 8 should include all of those personnel from the state of Oregon that have been activated to federal service. On Senate Bill number 9, the same thing applies. If we lose a member of the, say we did lose a member of the United States Marine Corps Reserve out of Eugene, I think he should have the same, receive the same consideration that the National Guard or the military department does. On Senate Bill number 10, the Oregon veterans wanted administered by the Department of Veterans Affairs. We would like to see that the veteran service officers receive the full $12,500 a year. We'd like to see that all veteran service officers are treated the same, no matter what location they're in, and then all veterans throughout the state are treated the same. on Senate Bill number 486. The same thing applies if a man is killed in action. His widow or his family should receive the same thing, no matter whether he's a member of the military department, a Marine reservist, or a Coast Guard reservist, or Air Force or Army reservist. They should be all treated alike. And that's basically it. On who is an Oregon veteran? I suggest that we may use the same criteria that we use to find out who's an Oregon Medal of Honor recipient. If he joins the service from the state of Oregon, he is considered an Oregon veteran, an Oregon Medal of Honor recipient.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Who's next? Who wants to be next?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Val Conley, and I am the administrator for the Veterans Services Division for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I wish to read my brief testimony, and then I will take questions afterwards. The mission of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs is to advocate for veterans, their dependents, and survivors. The department does this within an existing system. Veterans, their dependents, and survivors have several options by which they can apply for benefits earned as a result of a veteran's service to state and nation. Options for filing benefits includes individuals filing for benefits themselves, which is not recommended due to the complexity of the laws governing veterans' benefits. More attractive options include obtaining the assistance of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, Veterans Benefits Counselors, County Veterans Service Officers, or congressionally chartered veterans service organizations. The services of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, County Veterans Service Officers, and veterans organizations is provided at no cost to the individual filing for benefits. Currently, there's a system in place, along with the infrastructure in the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs existing budget, to pass dollars through to county veteran service officers and veterans organizations under the department's currently existing program of aid to counties and veterans organizations. The Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs is accredited by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs to provide veteran services, which is defined in Oregon statute as assisting veterans in prosecutions of their claims to ensure they receive all veteran benefits to which they may be entitled to under the law. Additionally, through a contract with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs provides training, testing, and accreditation for both department employees and county veteran service officers. The department would support additional monies for these programs if such funds were available. However, the department believes it would be better government and more cost-effective to use the already existing system and established infrastructure to distribute such funds. Fracturing the established program of aid to counties by mandating another state agency to duplicate existing infrastructure, develop formulas to distribute funds, establish policies and procedures, etc., could be questioned as to whether it was good government and whether it was effective and efficient use of resources. In addition to the duplication of infrastructure and process for disbursement of funds, other considerations include additional training needs, resources to cover the additional requirements of the Department of Administrative Services to create a system for data collection and reporting, and possible challenges of the county to adhere to the requirements of two state agencies as opposed to one. The department values its relationship with both the county veteran service officers and the veterans organizations. Value of the relationship is evidenced in the department partnering with the county veteran service officers to provide quality training and effective use of information technology. The department has a history of requesting additional dollars for aid to counties under the existing system. If monies are available, the department would support an increase in payments to counties and believe the way to accomplish that would be through the existing aid to counties program. Again, the department values its relationship with the county veteran service officers. Through them, valuable service is provided to Oregon veterans, their dependents, and survivors. Their work and advocacy for veterans, their dependents, and survivors results in dollars and needed benefits, such as health care for these deserving families. The flow of these federal dollars into Oregon positively impacts the state of Oregon. That concludes my testimony. I appreciate having had the opportunity to testify before you, and I will take any questions.
We'll ask some questions later, possibly. I'm interested in getting some first impressions here, and with that, let's move on.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, my name is Bill Fink. I'm the administrator of the Operations Division at the Department of Administrative Services, and I'm here this afternoon to testify on behalf of the department in opposition to Senate Bill 10. I'll be very brief since you have my written testimony. Our opposition is based on two factors. One is that it would require additional administrative and infrastructure expense that are not in the governor's budget. And secondly, it's not the mission of DAS to provide direct program services to veterans. Our mission is to provide infrastructure to state government agencies. We think we do that well, but we think we'd be out of our league if we try to provide a program like this. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just a quick question. Mr. Fink, your opposition to Senate Bill 10 is not the policy issue of the bill. It's the implementation and running the money through your agency, correct?
Chair Shields, Senator Walker, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike, your turn.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. I'm just walked through them, Senate Bill 8, 9, and 487, I guess it is. Six. We're not going to talk about Senate Bill 10. Oregon Military Department supports the concept that is drafted in Senate Bill 8. However, if the bill goes forward, we would like to see it amended. Line 8, we would like to see the word rules removed and insert the word regulations. We don't make rules, we make regulations in the military department. So we have to remain
that
neutral.
Would be military, yes.
Yes, sir. We have to remain neutral on the bill because it's not in the current governor's adopted budget, and so therefore we can't take it for or against it. But if it goes forward, we'd certainly like to see that change made. Senate Bill 9, again, we're supportive of the concept, and we're grateful that legislature's thinking in these terms. Again, on line 14, we would like the word rules dropped, and line 14, regulations added. One other bit of information that was briefly mentioned in Senator Courtney's presentation was that currently the Oregon National Guard Association, which is a authorized in the statutory language of the state, has a as an organization, has a life insurance policy program that we currently operate and have for over 20 years in the state of Oregon. Currently, that program offers every member of the Oregon National Guard, by virtue of membership, $1,000 worth of life insurance. What might be a better opportunity, as the senator mentioned, if we amend the bill, if we were going to go down this route, we could probably leverage the dollars we were going to pay in this operation and have a better benefit for fewer dollars.
Right.
And I think we could work that out with the committee staff, and you could understand that more completely if we go further. But again, officially, we need to remain neutral on that particular item. Senate Bill 486, again, this is another act that would be very good for surviving members. As a matter of history, we have a tuition assistance program that has been unfunded for the last two biennia because of lack of funding for National Guard members. We were fortunate because the federal government did increase their tuition benefits, and we were able to shift our people over to that. And we were able to take advantage of those federal resources, which we would continue to do, and I would suspect anybody would. In the meantime, however, this is that they don't have programs for spouses or other members. We did do a belated assessment or a financial impact statement, and I have it here, and I'll leave it with the committee. The first one was zero, I think, because some mix-up in the terminology and how our people were doing the numbers. But the impact on that one is $213,960. And that concludes my testimony. Any questions you may have of me?
Well, you've certainly given me something to think about. I want to thank you for your testimony and your suggestions for amendments. I'd like to have you meet with Judith.
Yes,
we're going to sift all of this out, and we're going to get around to all four of these bills, but I'm not going to do that today. I want to thank each of you. I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 8, 9, 10, and 486. And I'm going to open a two-minute work session on Senate Bill 223. That's about the length of time we've got to do that one.
Mr. Chair, would you like a motion?
I'd love a motion.
Mr. Chair, I believe this bill doesn't need any amendments, so I'd move it as is, Senate Bill 223, to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 223 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I think everybody by now understands this bill. This is the 97% to 100% bill. That's what I. That's as short a summary as you can get. Okay. Is there any further discussion? If not, would the clerk call the roll on Senate Bill 223?
Senator George. Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator
Berger.
Aye.
Senator Walker.
Aye.
Aye. And with that, Senate Bill 223 is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I'm going to carry this bill. We've taken enough time with it. I might as well have some fun. Okay? Sorry you didn't get to talk. But, I mean, you know, you talk, you might lose a bill. Who knows? And with that, I want to open a hearing, an informational meeting, and ask Brenda Rothland if she'll come forward and give us some homework that we're going to do. Everybody at the dais has this book. It's bedtime reading for all of us for some period of time. And she is going, I want to tell you this right now. Brenda's going to share with us for the next 15 or 20 minutes. And we are going to come back next Tuesday with all of our follow-up questions.
Oh, there will be some.
Oh, I'm sure. You might do her a favor and send advance warning of what the follow-up questions are going to be. I haven't read it yet. I don't threaten that way. Go ahead. Brenda, it's good to have you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. First of all, for the record, Brenda Rothland, interim president of SAFE Corporation. I think the good news is the three-hour presentation I was going to give this afternoon has now been pared down to about 3 minutes. So I'm just going to give you the highlights because I think it does make sense to give all of you an opportunity to look over the report over the course of the next week and then be prepared to ask me any questions you wish. Thank you, though, for inviting me to be here today and to make at least a few brief comments about the report, which, as you all know, we issued earlier today.
Brenda, I do want to apologize for keeping you sitting here for an hour and 40 minutes since we started. I had no idea the complexity of some of the bills that we ran into today, and so I just apologize. And seriously, take 10 or 15 minutes. Don't squeeze it down to three. I'd like enough of an overview before I get started that I know what the bedtime reading is going to be.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And I will tell you, as this committee has probably observed in the past, a lot of times my 3 minutes run into 30.
Oh,
but I'm not going to do that.
Like a good lawyer.
Exactly. Yeah, it's hard to get away from that. Let me just say a couple general comments, though, right off the bat. For the past 6 months, we have focused on administrative issues that we believed merited our immediate attention at SAFE Corporation. And the report before you today addresses those issues. We also intend to issue a final report to the governor later this year. That's the reason this is an initial report to the governor. And in that report, we intend to address some administrative issues that we simply didn't have time to conclude before issuing today's report. And at that time, we will also address some of the insurance operations issues that I've mentioned in the executive summary that we will come back to. We just simply hadn't had time yet to fully research and make recommendations in those areas. Let me make two general comments. One, as will be clear when you read our report, our work is not done. The report represents what we were able to accomplish in 180 days. There are other issues that have been brought to our attention, many of which this committee has been addressing over the course of the past year, that we are committed to reviewing and addressing. And we are not suggesting today by issuing this report that those issues are any less important than the issues in our initial report. but certain issues, such as the public records issue that I will address here in a few moments, commanded our immediate attention, and we just simply felt like we had to take on those issues right now. Second, this report focuses on areas where we felt we needed to make improvements. But one of the things, and I won't get into it much today, but I do want the committee to know that as we reviewed safe operations, certainly improvements needed to be made in a number of areas. But we also found much that was good about Safe Corporation. And I specifically want to comment on the 800-plus employees who I think we have found to be talented and knowledgeable and really committed to Safe's public mission. And I am confident that the current executive team is also up to the task of moving SAFE forward into the future. And I'll make some more comments about that next Tuesday when I reappear. What I'd like to do now is turn to some specific areas. And I'll just warn you right up front that my comments aren't going to track the report necessarily. What I'd like to do for my remaining time today is just really take you through the four specific areas that are set forth in the executive summary as being the four areas where we felt improvements were needed, and I'd like to focus on those both today and next Tuesday. First area I'd like to talk just a few minutes about is in the area of public records. And I think comment today on two things.
What page are you on?
One.
Brenda, what can we turn to the executive summary on page one or III?
You can, although let me also refer you at this point to the actual body of the report. If you could start with page 42, I just have a couple brief comments about that. Page 42 is a section of the report entitled Destruction of Public Records. And I do want to make a couple comments about that. That is obviously an area that is of concern to me, as it should be. And I want the committee to know that I take all of those allegations seriously. The matter appropriately has been referred to the Oregon State Police. We have cooperated fully with their investigation and will continue to do so. The criminal investigation, as you know from the report, is still ongoing. I don't know when it will be concluded. I just know it's ongoing at this point. And in the meantime, what I would tell you is that I believe strongly that we have put the processes in place at Safe Corporation to safeguard Safe's records going forward. The second comment I want to make about public records is just a general comment that this committee is well aware of, and that is, again, the broader public policy issue on public records in general that we've been talking about in connection with Senate Bill 310. And I very much look forward to a further conversation with this committee about that bill and about other pieces of public records legislation that may come before this committee. We are committed to improving the public records process at Safe Corporation, and I think you will see from the report that we have made many steps forward in the right direction in terms of setting out a policy that lets the public and Safe Corporation know how we will respond to public records requests. And we've also, because this is such a priority to us, we have created a special position that has one person in charge of responding to public records requests, and it's a high enough commitment on our part that it's the Vice President of Legal Services who actually makes certain that we comply fully with all of our public records requests and do it right. And Mr. Mueller works closely with me, closely with the Department of Justice, and we now have that process in place to make certain that we take care of all of those requests seriously. I do encourage you to read pages 36 through 39 of the report on public records. I'm going to warn you in terms of whether you want to read it tonight. I did lapse into being a lawyer on those pages of the report. But I think it's very important for this committee to understand the current state of the law as it relates to safe corporation and public records issues. And I've tried to really explain how the law currently works as interpreted by the Oregon Court of Appeals. And I think those pages will get everybody up to speed on those issues. The second major area that we address in the report is in the area of contracts. And I just refer you, I think in terms of this area, I know there will be a lot of questions for me in terms of specific contracts and what we're doing and what we have done. I'll save that for Tuesday. But just to give you a heads up on what I think I would want you to look at before Tuesday is there is a new contracts policy set out in the appendix under the heading contracts policy. And it pretty much lets you know that the board recently adopted this at its meeting in February, I think last week. And it specifically sets out then what types of contracts the board of directors now has to approve before those contracts are approved by the president of Safe Corporation. And it's in the areas of group and trade contracts, trade association contracts, public relations, lobbying, contracts over a specific dollar amount, any contract that would run longer than 3 years, and then any other type of contract that the board wants to see before either I or a vice president would approve it. So take a look at that, and I will be happy to answer specific contract questions that you have on Tuesday. We've addressed specific contract issues in terms of advertising, group and trade association contracts, and lobbying contracts in the report, but I'd be happy to respond to that next week. The third major area of concern that we've identified, and again I'm going to refer you to an appendix to take a look at, is in the area of the diversity of SAFE's workforce. And perhaps this is a good day for me to actually make a couple comments about that.
If you look at your appendices, which one is it? It's just on your second page. You can identify it for us quickly, I'm sure.
It's at the top of the report, kind of second level of tabs down, called Diversity Report.
Number six.
Diversity Report and Goals.
Okay, yes. Number six. Okay. Thank you.
And again, I think that document probably speaks for itself, so I don't know that I need to make much comment about that today, other than to tell the committee that that is an area where we clearly have to do a better job. And again, committed to working on that. When we do the final report, we will have a strategic plan set forth on how we can make improvements in the diversity of SAFE's workforce. I think you probably know from putting up with me over the years that my philosophy on this is the same as it is on any other area. I'm not going to study this thing to death. I don't think that's how you do things. I'm going to put together a strategic plan and make positive steps to move Safe Corporation forward in this area. So I'd be happy to talk again about that on Tuesday as well.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Maybe Ms. Rockland could share that plan with the governor's office for our executive appointment process.
Subtle, isn't she?
I'm assuming that's not a question, so.
No, I think you can avoid responding
okay.
to that one.
The final area of concern that we identified in the executive summary and discussed throughout the report is really in the area of board oversight. And two conclusions were reached. One, that the board needs to be more actively engaged in setting policy and reviewing operations than it has been in the past. And secondly, we determined that the board needs to be more transparent in its operations. And the good news, I think, for the committee this afternoon is that I think we have taken the steps to address those issues. The new board is much more actively engaged in reviewing SAFE operations, and we're giving them the information they need to make good decisions. And so I think we've just taken a step forward in board oversight responsibilities. The other thing, again, this goes back to Senate Bill 310, because I think Senate Bill 310 also addresses some of these issues as well. And in terms of transparency, you'll see we've addressed that in the report, but in terms of making it clear to the press and the public what's on the agenda for board meetings, more detailed board minutes, all of that has been taken care of. We now record all the board minutes or board meetings, which was not done in the past, And I just think we've really taken a step forward in being much more transparent. So with that, I know it's been a long day. I'm happy to take any initial questions the committee may have, but I will be back on Tuesday.
More than questions, I hope your questions kind of give direction to Brenda in terms of information you want. Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make a statement, and that is that as we do our business in the legislature, the one thing that we have is our word. And I want to thank Mrs. Rockland for the integrity that she has produced with the lottery work that you did there. And because of that, you come to this with such personal integrity that there's a lot of trust in the sincerity of your testimony. Whether we agree and disagree on all the issues, that is such an important first step for me as a person on this committee, and I want to thank you for that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate those comments.
Are there other...
It's not my long list.
It's a short one. Go ahead.
It's a short list, Mr. Chair, and I also want to thank Ms. Rockland because I thought they've done a yeoman's job here. Because as I noticed in your summary, executive summary, you were appointed on August 12th, and you began your review on August 16th, and you met with me, I think, the very next day after your appointment. So you've done a heck of a lot of work. I'm disappointed, not, I guess, so much in you, but just in the fact that the time is not going to get us to examining the processing of claims and the worker-related issues that I think are important to us this session, and it appears that's going to come at the end. And I don't fault you for that. I just, the time crunch is really, the things you had to take care of right away were extremely important. Let me just state that, unless you think I've read the report, I have not, but it was brought to my attention by a member of the media on page 28 where you talk about the fraud referrals that you did investigate my claim about paying bonuses to your employees for referring those. I will attempt this weekend to obtain the deposition testimony that will prove that point to you and hopefully have that for you on Monday. And you can address that to our committee on Tuesday. That will depend on whether I can locate the two individuals who have that deposition testimony. But it is in deposition testimony by your own employees from Safe Corporation. So I'm hopefully I can get that to you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walkie, happy to take a look at that.
Thank you.
Any other questions or items that you'd like Brenda to particularly be ready to address?
Mr. Chair, I'll be asking a lot of questions.
I'm sure you will.
About group contracts and lobby contracts.
We might have a few of your questions and let a few of the rest of us ask questions and go back and let you have a few more questions and then we'll go around.
That's fine. I just wanted to know that I'll be probing a little more deeply into the group contract.
I want to thank each of you three committee members, Senator Starr, Joanne, Vicki, I really mean it. I appreciate the work this afternoon. I know that we were all over the place because I felt the imperative to move various things at various times. And for those that are still here, I want to thank you. We will be returning to all the Senate bills that we heard today. We've got all kinds of meetings planned with Colonel Caldwell and with members of various organizations relative to these bills. I'll probably be sitting down with Representative Nelson and working with her as well so we can get finished products ready to go and moved across to the other side. And with that, I'm going to adjourn the Senate Committee on General Government. Is that okay?